The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Upset special alert. The Kansas City Royals, who took 16 of their last 18 games for the regular season, have now lost back-to-back games against the Boston Red Sox, getting blown out in Game 2, and then the Red Sox coming from behind, down 1-0, winning it 3-1, taking the series. Lucas Giolito with a much-needed performance for the ages, and for the ages, I mean exactly that. Six-plus innings, only allowed one run. The run he was actually his fault because of a throwing error. And then Rafi Devers with an absolute moonshot to deep center, 440 feet. I mean, I'm happy that we were able to take this one. This is an upset special. So naturally, a team that's won 16 of 18 with the Red Sox that have drama after drama after drama, we're able to take this one. Jeremy, your quick thought.
Yeah, as Terry likes to say, I didn't have winning the series on my bingo card. They go into the first game and they're just completely punchless. And we're going to get into it later for internal reasons, performance reasons, whatever's the reason. It just the letdown of finding a way to lose the opener. I was ready for like anything, including a sweep. So the fact that we're talking about winning the series today is tremendous. It's exciting. And we'll talk about it also later, but I feel the same going into this Tiger series coming up. So positive Sunday vibes here. Very excited. Let's get into it, Charles.
Yeah, man. So I think first things first, happy Mother's Day. So to your wife, happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers out there that are either near or far or no longer with us. Happy Mother's Day to all of the moms today, whether they be Red Sox fans, baseball fans, non-baseball fans. It does not matter. Today's your day. And thankfully, the Red Sox were able to pull this one out. I mean, I don't think anybody thought that Lucas Giolito was going to go 6-plus against Kansas City, against a team that has won 16 of their last 18 games. It just didn't make sense. And I needed this. Like, I really needed Giolito to absolutely shove in this game. And one earned run or one run allowed in six-plus innings. He only struck out five. It wasn't the best performance of his career, but you did enough to get the win. You came out. You got your quality start. You almost went seven. You had a little bit of run support. It wasn't like Game 2 where they dropped double digits, but a couple of moonshots. I mean, I don't think there was a doubt for either one of those home runs. Like, Willy Abreu shot. It's just, I mean, it's giving me, and forgive the, this is not to be disrespectful, but when I saw that swing, it was kind of reminiscent of the, you know, late 1990s Ken Griffey Jr. As soon as he hit it, I was like, oh, that's gone. That wasn't even like a question. Like, I was like, yep, bye. Don't even look at it. You just get, ask for another baseball. And then with Rafi Devers, Rafi hits it. It's like, off the bat, he starts doing this thing where he's kind of like backing up and then slowly making his way to first base. Not too many times have I ever seen him do that and it not be a home run. So he knows it as soon as he hits it, that thing's gone. And that was all the Red Sox needed. It was just those two amazing hits. Both of them went for 430 and 440 feet. Giolito did absolutely insane work on the mound. And then I don't think we're going to be able to get away with not also saying thank you, Jaron, for the ninth inning, because if he doesn't make that play, I don't know if we're out of the ninth inning unscathed. So right away, we have a lot of good with Willy Abreu starting to find that stride back. Rafi Devers, I mean, has been the talk of Major League Baseball. And if he's able to kind of silence the, you know, the distractions and silence the people that are going to be talking, you keep doing this, no one's going to be able to say anything. It doesn't matter if you go 1-for-3, 1-for-4. If your one is a home run, no one's going to be talking. That's it. And then, of course, Giolito doing what Giolito does. So at least hopefully what we hope to be seeing a little bit more this year. So what were some of your big takeaways from this game and maybe even the series?
Well, for the series perspective, the fact that we were able to beat a team that is better than us right now, that is playing great baseball, there's something internally that happened in that dugout. There's an understanding, or the drama is not getting into the clubhouse. They don't care. It's a drama in the media. It's a drama to us, but it's not a drama to the team, and they can push through it and play. That's my takeaway for the series. For this game, the game for me pivoted in the bottom of the third and the top of the fourth. Bottom of the third, they've already pushed across a run. It's first and second. Giolito gets a very weak ground ball to short. So they only get the force, and then Witt's coming up. And I'm like, oh boy, this is not going to. And I hold Bobby Witt Jr. in extremely high regard. Like, I would love for him to be a Boston Red Sox. I'd do anything. And for Giolito to punch him out and you know, I hate to say this, but Witt looked almost a little bit overmatched. And then he gets the final out and they get out of it. And I'm like, okay, because I was ready to go the wrong way there. I was ready for the 3-run home run and to, you know, maybe throw a pillow or something. And then you come back and Lugo was shoving, right? He was totally in command. I was watching the game with my buddy Anthony, and I'm like, he's throwing the ball before the pitch clock ticks down to 10. So he was throwing a baseball like every 7 seconds. Like, he was in complete rhythm. I was remarking to that how, like, he wasn't gassed. He wasn't sweating. He was just in rhythm. Four seamer, cutter, like doing what he wanted to. And after the count got to 0-2, I said to my buddy, I'm like, this at bat's over. It's total control. And I think Abreu fouled off a four seamer way. And I said to myself, I think something's coming in. And that was not a bad pitch to Abreu, and he just absolutely crushed it. That was the turning point in the game, because it felt like it was going to go the wrong way. It's been going the wrong way in those scenarios for the Sox all year. And for Giolito to get out of the bottom of the third and for Abreu to hit that ball in the top, it just reset the momentum, leveled things off. Giolito continued to roll. The bullpen was very good, although Chapman didn't miss a lot of bats there in the ninth, but that was the pivot point in the game, and that afforded us to have the opportunity for Devers to crush that ball to center field. The best thing I can say about a well-hit Devers ball is his body language is immediate, and you kind of exactly know what's going on, right? If he hits a ball and he's hustling out of the boxes because he thinks he can get a double out of it, when he does that step back and admire it thing, you're like, let's see how far this one goes. And they have that backdrop in Kansas City, and it hit like 3/4 of the way up it.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that Duran's ball and left, again, not missing a lot of at bats. It was kind of a wonky play, and he maybe made it look a little bit harder than it had to be, but who cares? He caught the ball, and Sox hopefully are building momentum here.
Yeah, so there's a couple things to chat about based on the points that you just made. Number one, Jaron Duran perhaps made that possibly a little bit more difficult than it had to be, but he has the speed to kind of make up for any uncomfortable situation with kind of playing the ball. So he has the extra speed. I'm not worried about it. At the end of the day, like you said, he made the catch, so it doesn't matter. That's one. Number two, Lugo was a pitcher that I think Terry wanted a couple years ago, and I was 100% no. I was like, this guy is just, he ain't it. He's never had 10 wins. I don't want to see his name here. And then last year, he won 16 games, threw over 200 innings, 180 plus strikeouts, had a 3 ERA. I looked so foolish. And he's been the kind of epitome of consistency. He hasn't missed he's been a starter, like clear-cut starter for the last two seasons, and he's just done fantastic. He started his career as a starter. It didn't really work out when he was in New York, got a chance in San Diego, did well, was able to turn that into a multi-year contract in Kansas City, and he's been great. He's 35 years old. He's doing better as far as his ERA is concerned. He's not quite striking out one an inning. I think that number is going to slowly start to tail off, but you already said it, like, he's doing really, really well, and he's achieving expectations for that team. Now, the Bobby Witt strikeout, because there were several, that's up and in at 96 miles an hour. If you look at that at bat again, he's down 0-2 pretty quick. So you go down 0-2, the advantage is to the pitcher. He could throw one or two waste pitches if he wants to. Up and in 96, I don't know many players that are going to make contact with that pitch. So overmatched, maybe a little bit, but I think based on the location, that's just an unfair pitch. If you're going to paint 96 up and in, that's a hard pitch to hit. It doesn't matter who you are. And I think Bobby Witt, you could arguably say is a top four player in baseball as far as like five to a player. He can hit for average, hit for power. He's an incredible defender, can steal bases if he wants to. I mean, the guy is just one of the pure all-around players in baseball. So this is just kind of like a blippy game. And if you looked at Bobby Witt over the last couple of days, I don't know if it was something with just the area around shortstop, but he was misplaying a couple balls. Trevor Story also was kind of experiencing a little bit. The ball's taking kind of funky hops. It kind of bounced off his chest off the ground and didn't get a throw in. And Trevor Story had a home run yesterday, so we're not talking about it. It is what it is. Home run cancels out the misplay. There was another one also that Trevor Story had. It went off of, I forget who the pitcher was at the time, but it ended up going off the pitcher's, like, it looked like his shin, and it bounced right to him, fired to first. It wasn't in time, unlucky. But Bobby Witt, I kind of just feel like was kind of hitting like a little bit of an off stride, both defensively and offensively. To your point, maybe a little bit overmatched. I don't think anyone thought that Giolito was going to strike out Bobby Witt. I didn't think so. But that, to your point, looked like it could have been an inning that got completely away from us. We could have lost the game in the third inning. You've talked about it, that a team can lose. What's the expression you say? A team can lose the season in the first month of.
You can't win a division in the first month of the season, but you can lose it.
Thank you. I'm glad you did it because you're more eloquent with that line than I am. And that was the thing. It kind of felt like you can lose a game in a certain inning, but you can't win it in a specific inning. And in the third inning alone, where it just kind of looked like it was falling apart, you get that strikeout, you've built a little bit of momentum. That was the changing point for me, because when you get the grounded after that, it's like, okay, cool. We're down 1-0. Let's see if we can at least tie it up over the next 2-3 innings, and maybe we get lucky and pick up another run in the last third of the game. That's my hope. And we're able to get the home run in the very next inning, ties it up. Then moments later, hold my beer, Rafi Devers, it's another two-run moonshot, and now we're up 3-1. So the entire landscape of the game and the series changed in less than two innings. You have two hits that changed the game. Giolito shoved for 6+. Everything that could have gone right for the team did, with one exception. And your team, if you're good, should be able to overcome one blip. And that's all it was. He went 6+. He allowed a run. It wasn't earned because of his error. And the rest of the team was able to rally around it. And I say the rest of the team, it's really like the top four or five guys, because we haven't really gotten that much from the bottom of the lineup. You know, Sogard, not a big bat, but had a really nice play where, because of his defense, they were able to turn two, tags first base, and they're able to get another runner in a rundown. So it's small things in baseball. It's just like the little things that are going to get it done. And dude, the sacrifice to move our Narvaez over to third base, I didn't think that was happening. I didn't see that happening at all. So perfect call, and it worked out. You know, like it was a good bunt, and it was little things like that really kind of changed the kind of the scope, I think, and mentality of the game. The Red Sox almost hit Kevin Biggio, and he was able to get out of the way. I believe this is in the first game, and he just kind of sticks the bat out, and the ball goes in front, and they're able to get a run out of that. And the small bits in baseball, like it's such a complex game. If you can master those little things, get the runners over, sacrifice hits, sacrifice, you know, just anything, sacrifice anything. Small ball matters. And if you can't master those aspects of the game, you're only going to go so far. It doesn't matter what inning it happens in. It happened. We didn't score, you know, it wasn't a run that scored because of that play, but it created a little bit of chaos on the pass. And That's what you're trying to do. You're not just trying to be a boom or bust team. It's not, okay, we're either going to hit home runs or we're going to strike out. That's not the Boston Red Sox. We don't have five bangers.
You're talking about situational baseball, Charlie, and it's what we've been doing so poorly, and it was, and what has created the inconsistent nature in which the Sox play. Teams like the Royals, like the Tigers, they play in the situations correctly. And I'm going to give you some examples of things we haven't done traditionally, right? With the ghost runner rule, the extra innings is just purely situational baseball. You need 100%. To either bunt or hit a ball on the right side or in the air so that the batter can then tag to third. And then you need either a hard hit base hit or a sac fly to score the run without a hit. Teams that do it win one run games. And last week, the stat, and I don't remember exactly what it was. I think we were like 2-7 in one run games. And the reason for that is very, very simple. This team up until like recently sucks situationally. So a couple of examples you gave is Sogar dives and has the awareness to tag the base for the immediate out and then pops to his feet and they execute the rundown with Giolito actually covering the bag to tag out the base runner. And I said to my buddy Anthony, I was watching the game with, I said, whoa, 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 whoa. That was well done. That's not what we do here. All right.
Exactly.
So, and then the bunt, and I like blinked and I was like, I didn't expect it. They never bunt in that scenario. They didn't bunt in game one when I thought that there was some opportunities to do that. And when you're struggling offensively, it can put pressure on the defense by getting people in on the third base with less than two outs so that you don't need a hit to score a run. It's little things like that. They did it today on Sunday in game three of the Royals series, and it's the reason why they won the game. But moving forward, if this is a team that's going to compete into the playoffs and be a team that's, we're talking 8, 10, 12, whatever games over 500, it's those moments that they need to start executing on a more consistent basis.
Yeah,
so they did it today.
Yeah, to your point, this is actually yesterday. They said that the Boston Red Sox are 4-10 this season in one-run games.
Yeah.
You have to be a good team, you have to be 50%. You have to be 500 in one-run games. You might get unlucky sometimes. You should be able to win the other half. You have a variance of -3 on that one. You should have taken three of those games. The Royals are 8-2. So to your point, they're able to perfect small aspects of the game. Small ball matters. And I just had to look it up because I don't remember. How many sacrifice hits did Seydon Rafaela have this year? That was just the second one. And it's the first since May 2nd. He didn't have one all of May. So either you're going to try to tell me that that situation did not happen for Seydon at all in the month of April, or we just completely forgot about the little things in baseball. And I'm going to go on the line and say, we probably forgot the small things in baseball because go ahead. Yeah.
I want to make a point there.
Yeah.
Why does Cora not move runners along with bunting and things like that? Do you know why?
What do you think it is?
I know what it is. The analytics say play for the three run inning. And it doesn't, you know, it's like analytics versus the eye test, right? Like old baseball minds are like, well, that's not what my eyes are telling me.
Sure.
And the Dodgers and the Sox are beholden to the analytics. So you'd rather limit your opportunities to have one run innings in the hopes of having a three run inning. To me, there's a time and a place for that. And I get that when you're rolling, when you're maybe playing the White Sox or some other trash team, fine. But like, I'd like to see them put the analytics down a little bit.
Right.
And do things like this more often. Because the other part of this is Rafaela can absolutely fly. That it was a left-handed reliever on the mound at the time. He had to make a spinning throw to throw him out on a set. Bang, bang. Like all the pressure in the world is on the defense. And the Royals are a good team. So they make the play. The reliever is doing his pitching fielding practice and he makes it look really easy and smooth. But if he bobbles that even for a second, it turns into a base hit. So I like that aspect of it. I wish they would do more of it. I wish they would put some of the analytics away in those moments and let Cora, who played before analytics were a thing,
right,
go through with the eye test just a little bit, you know? And by the way, getting a sack bunt down is going to help Rafaela's mentality that he's contributing in a positive manner. I wouldn't be surprised to see him have a big hit tomorrow. You know, right. These things roll downhill.
So let me ask you this, because advanced analytics, to your point, you're absolutely right. That's definitely one of the reasons, if not the only reason, that that's happening. But, and I have to really like conscientiously think about this. Before Moneyball came out, before the Oakland Athletics started doing that, do you think that advanced analytics would be in play as much as they are now? Because the Boston Red Sox are not the only team that is using advanced analytics in this manner. I mean, the Los Angeles Dodgers have just a dumb number of money and manpower put on these kinds of situations and analytics alone, to the point where you almost kind of wonder, like, how much is Dave Roberts doing before, you know, analytics are kind of speaking for it? He's just kind of like the puppet. He's the face of the, you know, human the resources. Team in that sense. Yeah, I mean, it's just...
He's managing the personalities in the dugout.
That's all he's really doing. I mean, you got 4-5 guys on that team that are capable of being an MVP. I mean, you can go for the 3-run inning every single time because you have Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, Will Smith, Teoscar Hernandez, even though he's on the IL right now, in the lineup 1-5. That's an all-star game lineup 1-5. And that's all on the same team. The Boston Red Sox 1-5 is not that. So to your point, I absolutely agree. This should be a team that starts to explore advanced analytics to a point, but has to perhaps throw it out or say, you know what, maybe now's not the right time for it. Because if you live and die by advanced analytics, you will lose pivotal games in situations or moments when you should not have lost that game. Baseball, you know, diehard baseball fans from decades ago would have said, okay, I understand why you might have switched that because of a situation. He doesn't do well against lefties. Perfect example would have been last year for the Boston Red Sox. They brought in a pitcher in a situation specifically because a certain player on their team, Freddie Freeman, had not hit a home run against a left-handed pitcher all season long. Freddie Freeman unloads with the bases loaded and puts the Dodgers up 4-1 against the Boston Red Sox. Advanced analytics say that was the smart play. Baseball purists would have said, stupid move. You don't bring in Brandon Bernardino in when your pitcher is dealing just because a lefty hasn't given up a home run to Freddie Freeman. That was one of the moments when because I was at that game at Dodger Stadium. I sat there like, wow, thank you, Dodger Stadium, for not making me feel like a complete fool. But we're up in that game 1-0 until the eighth inning. He hits a moonshot, grand slam, goodbye. And Freddie Freeman's like as clutch as clutch can be. He's hitting, I don't know, like 350 or whatever this year. He's just absolutely insane. And this is someone who's had two freak injuries, one falling out of the shower. He did something to his ankle. He did something else. Like, it's just unreal. But the Red Sox are not that team. We don't have that kind of offensive onslaught where we can just 100% wholeheartedly depend on analytics in order to win baseball games. It's not realistic, and it shouldn't be the case for our team.
So analytics was first introduced to baseball in the Moneyball era, and it's about how you build a roster. It's about the formula, age, production, how you pay players, and it's how you even run pitch to pitch, you know, when it's time to pinch hit, when's the time to go to the bullpen. And look, I get it. There is a place in baseball for analytics, and those that don't use analytics are going to be left behind completely. But I'm sorry, if Sedane Raphael is batting ninth and there's a guy on second, first or second in the late innings, and he's 0-3 with 3 punch outs, I don't give a, oh, I almost swore. I don't give a, I don't care that it says to let him swing. Sure. The eye test says, hey, let's move the runner along and give the struggling player a reason to feel good about himself. There's multiple layers to it. So I don't want this to be an analytics episode, but that's what I'll say about it, right? Like, and Cora does understand the game. I'm a huge Cora guy. I'm softening a little bit, but I've traditionally been a huge Cora guy because I always thought he did manage that, but it's becoming a little bit too much. I just thought today, you know, they did a little of the small ball things, the situational things that they need to do to win on a daily basis so that when they get into the extras next time, they're going to score in the 10th instead of going, you know, putting no pressure on the Royals in that 10th, which is why the 11th happens and we lose the game. So right. You got to be trying to hit the ball on the right side of the thing. I don't want to see a fly out to left as the first at bat in an extra innings game. And we do things like that routinely.
Right.
If you don't mind, I just want to quickly pivot to Giolito because I know we're going to get to Devers.
Yeah, so yeah,
my biggest thing going into this, and by the way, I put this in the war room. I thought he was going to get smoked today, Giolito. His minor league rehabs are absolute disaster, right? He's all over the map, and you kind of get it. He's coming off a year of not pitching, Tommy John, everything else. I thought he was going to be a disaster. I've picked against the Sox every time he's pitched. He's proven me wrong. I thought I was now right because last week in the rain, he was kind of all over. His stuff was terrible. He's pitched 16 and two-thirds innings. He only has 4 walks.
Correct.
So
yeah,
I'm going to go ahead and back off the – I'm not going to say hatred, although that's what Twitter will say, but I'm going to back off picking against the Sox every time Giolito pitches because with the exception of 5 days ago, he's given the Sox a chance to win every time out.
Yeah, so Giolito's – this is actually his second quality start of the year. This is the farthest he's gone into a game in a long time. And as a member of the Red Sox, he went 6 innings against Toronto. He only walked 2. He struck out 7. So that was great. His second game, not so great. Got absolutely rocked against Texas, and that was not pretty. He's also only given up a couple of home runs. That happened in the Toronto game. He didn't give up any home runs today. He didn't give up any home runs against Texas. So while his K9 ratio isn't 1-to-1, and Terry's a big K9 guy, loves the strikeouts, I'm okay if you're not averaging a strikeout an inning, if you're allowed to limit the damage to 1 run over the course of 6+. I don't care if you strike out no guys. If you have 0 strikeouts and you've allowed 1 run and 6+, you've done your job. So second quality start, his first win as a member of the Red Sox. It's his first win since I had a check in 2023. I have to go back to it. And I don't remember when that win was, but it was September 15th of 2023. So it's been almost 2 years since Giolito has actually registered a victory in Major League Baseball. He has there is as little expectation as possible for this young man. He's only 30 years old. He's a California native. Went to school out here in the Beverly Hills area before he got drafted. The guy had everything going for him at the beginning and then fell off. And I'm happy to see somebody like this kind of turn it around because you like to see a little bit of a redemption story for some guys. Lucas Giolito has never done anything stupid. He's never been in the news for saying something dumb. He's never done anything wrong with his teammates. He's been an all-around good guy. So I want to give somebody like this the benefit of the doubt. This isn't like, Carl Everett or Milton Bradley or Tommy Pham, like just an absolute nightmare of an individual. And that moron got suspended earlier this year for just being disgusting. So Lucas Giolito is very reserved, very quiet. He's like the starting pitching version of Garrett Whitlock. I've never seen Garrett Whitlock do or say anything bad or stupid or anything. So I will continue rooting for Giolito. It'll be tough to pick him in every situation, every scenario, but I want to believe that someone who's capable of punching out 200 guys in a season, throwing 200 innings, has the capability, if you give him the run support, to win 16 to 20 games in a year. I want to see him be that guy. I really want to see him be that elite 2-3 guy, because if he's elite and you have Garrett Crochet and then Walker Buehler and Giolito as your 3, dude, I've been saying all season, been screaming it from the mountaintops. I told Terry, I said, I need to have this win today. I need it. I just need it. You have Garrett Crochet. He's a must win every single time. You just have to split the next 4 games. Win 2, lose 2. If you can get Buehler and Giolito to win and you end up splitting 4-5, you've stolen a game in your 5-game set. So, unless there's anything else you want to add to that, we can pivot to Devers.
Yeah, let's get to the go headline here.
Yeah, go for it, man. Hit us.
Yeah, I have a lot to unpack here because I hate John Henry with the passion of 1,000 suns and his scumbag puppet that he just shoves his hand in and makes him do whatever he wants, and Sam Kennedy. I'm not going to go long-winded on this because for those of you that have been listening, I rip him every chance I get. He's running Roush Fenway. He's running his hockey club, the Penguins. He's over in Europe running his premier team. The quote where he called the Boston Red Sox just an asset in his portfolio, I was screaming like everyone else, sell the team if that's how you feel. This is not an asset to the people in the city. This is a big part of the culture of the city. But I'm going to give him a little bit of props. And I don't know what he said. I don't know what he did. He might have even done something funny and made, you know, stupid, and Devers laughed at him and just calmed the situation down. But if he's showing up and starting to care a little bit, it can't be bad. That means he's paying attention to the day to, because that happened that day. Like, it happens in the clubhouse. Devers says what he did, however it was translated. I'm not bilingual. I don't know. There's the whole back and forth now on Twitter saying people that are bilingual interpreting themselves saying it's not what it said. It was more like this, whatever. He's obviously unhappy. We all have to agree with that. So he's paying attention on some level, because no one's telling John Henry to get on a flight and fly out to Kansas City. He takes it upon himself to go do it. I am the last person to be a John Henry supporter, but it showed even a slight minutia of ownership and taking it upon himself to go try to remedy a situation. I'll take it. You know, I hope he goes back and just stays in the back offices. And the only thing he's doing is writing checks and saying, yes, we can go get this reliever. Yes, we can go get a long-term solution at first base, and empowering Brezel to go do his job. Because in the moment, he did the exact opposite. Okay. By doing what he did, while I think it was good, and obviously we go win the series and we're playing, all of a sudden we're playing decent baseball, at least for a day.
Right.
It makes Brezel look like he has no authority over anybody. He can't control Cora. He can't control Devers. He tried, he failed. That much we know. So then Henry's got to come in and kind of be like, you know, billionaire, you know, matchmaker here, which again, it worked, but it just cuts the legs right out from underneath Craig. Could you imagine someone doing that to Theo Epstein? There's no way.
No.
So, I mean, while it masks the problem now and maybe puts the player back in a better headspace and says, look, I don't care what Craig said to you, you're our DH, and that settles the problem, whatever. It shows that there's another dysfunctional moment coming. You know, whether it's Story gets nicked up and has to go on the IL for a week, or, you know, somebody has to, Bayo has to miss a start, you know, and some player gets upset about whatever it is. Brezel has very little control over what's going on. And, you know, that's my overview. I could get more detail on certain parts of it. But this is what I'll leave, you know, this part of my take to, and I'll turn it over to you, Charlie.
Sure.
Whatever was the reason, credit to Devers for coming into this Royal Series and having a meaningful impact and essentially winning the game today on Sunday.
Absolutely.
So whatever it was, he put it behind him. Sogard's up. Personally, it should be Devers playing first base and Roman Anthony DHing. I think it makes you a better club immediately. But we get Sogard instead. He made a hell of a play today on that diving play tag, force out at first in the rundown. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, so a couple things to unpack from your unpack. He's going to have to get reps at first base if the expectation or the goal is to have him be the first baseman. I absolutely agree with you. I don't think there's any person on the planet that was going to go and try and do that with Theo Epstein at the helm. Absolutely not. The guy absolutely owned it in his role for, you know, and helped us win the most important World Series possibly in our team's history. So you have that going for you, but let's not forget that, you know, Breslow's here because no one else wanted the job. That's another big fact. And we can ignore that if we want to, but there were people that were like, hey, we'd really love you to be the GM, president of baseball operations here in Boston. And they're like, no, I'm good. So credit to Devers for doing his job and coming in and absolutely shoving in the series. I'm really happy about that. It's going to take a little bit more, and that's okay. The fact that John Henry did make that comment really did upset a lot of people. It upset, I'm sure, not only the players that work, that are employees of his, technically, for one of his, you know, portfolio pieces, but also the fans too, because like, are you calling us dumb? Like, the expectation isn't to win every year, but we want to be competitive. So yeah, like credit you for coming in and trying to talk to Devers for this situation, but please also remember this was a situation that a member of your staff created. So, you know, you don't get, you know, major kudos for coming in and being, you know, billionaire matchmaker, as you mentioned, Jeremy, because this is a situation that could have been so easily avoided if it was handled better. I think ultimately, yeah, Devers could possibly become the first baseman, but it's only going to happen once you start taking reps. Go grab the glove, start taking reps, trying to get a little comfortable with it. You know, I think Terry mentioned this on a prior episode too. We'd love for Bregman and Devers to have that relationship of, you know what, why don't you take third while I take first, and I'll just try to figure it out here while you kind of get your bearings straight at third, and then we'll figure it out. Because you're right, having Devers play in the field and opening up that DH position immediately makes our team a lot better offensively, and that's what we need to do. So I want Devers to be able to see that for what it is. This decision will make the team better, but he has to be the one to see it. It doesn't matter if 20 people tell you, hey, you need to do this. Hey, you need to do this. That gets annoying and frustrating. If you don't see that you need to do this, then it is what it is. So my hope is that, to your point, Jeremy, yes, Devers does become the first baseman. It's going to take a little bit of time, but man, oh man, this team, if we can continue on this train after taking 2 out of 3 against Kansas City, I'm all for it. So with that being said, let's pivot into the first game of this Detroit series. The Boston Red Sox will have Tanner Houck facing against Jackson Jobe. Who do you have in that one?
Tigers are good. I think when they're I think they're not like 9 games over .500. Scooble's my preseason pick to win the Cy. And I don't know if I didn't check to see if we have him in the series. I just know we don't have him tomorrow. So if Giolito is coming out of the danger zone in my brain, Houck's still in there. I just don't trust him to not give up the 3-run home run, to not kind of implode. I think his stuff is good enough, and I don't know where he is physically, arm slot, you know, mentally, I don't know. Obviously you almost never do, but I just don't trust him yet. And Detroit's a good team and we're still on the road. It's going to wear potential to wear the team down a little bit, at least for tomorrow. I'm taking the Tigers.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that one. I'm actually going to pivot. I'm going to kind of zig from your zag here. I'm actually going to go with Tanner Houck in this one only because, he's had 2 decent starts, and I don't know if Jackson Jobe had, if this is like kind of the beginning of a little bit of a rough patch, but Jackson Jobe gave up 6-6 against Colorado, and Colorado's the worst team in baseball. Granted, it was in Colorado. Terrible. Yeah, it didn't look so good. He gave up a couple home runs, and before that, he'd only given up 3 home runs all season and 5 starts. So it very much could have been the fact that you're playing on the moon in Colorado, and that's just tough. But Tanner Houck, last 2 games, 7 innings, 1 earned run. It was a solo home run. And then against Texas, he gave up 2 earned and a home run, and he went 4 2/3. It wasn't the prettiest, but again, it's a far cry from what we saw in the month of April when he gave up 11 earned and 2 plus. So I'm going to go with Tanner Houck. Anything else you want to add?
That's it. Go Sox.
That's hope it, man. That's gonna do it. Yeah, I know, you and me both, dude. So I hope the Red Sox are able to keep running the train, and that's going to do it for the Bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.